I mean, obviously, we've all wanted to be dragons. I know Terry and I for sure have.
Yes.
If you could pick one part of a dragon, one ability or like part that they have, what would it be?
Oh, the horde.
The
Well,
horde. That's a good one. Yeah.
it's hard to come up with a better one than that. The horde for sure. I think the minions might be nice, and I mean just
Minions.
like the lesser creature minions. The birds and the other creatures and things that are letting you know if something was in your territory, and you kind of like that would be useful, I think, to have an army of
Terry,
small.
you would get so annoyed with minions.
I might, yeah,
Like,
like.
I can't picture you having minions. You would get so annoyed.
Well, as long as they wouldn't like that, I'm not going to have like an open door policy, as they say. I'll have office hours. Like, you can bother me
Okay.
these hours on these select days. Unless there's something critical, and by critical I mean like impending doom. Otherwise, don't be wasting my time. Be brief, be bright, be gone. That's what I want in my life. But yeah,
All
probably
right. Minions are meant to be seen, not heard. Lessons like that kind of thing.
I'm just picturing you with a bunch of kobolds and trying to keep them under control.
Kobolds, yeah. Maybe. What's yours, Pepperina?
Well, anytime anybody asks me like why dragons and what got me into them, I always say like it was painting their wings for me. And a friend of mine told me that was because the wings represent freedom. So I think it would have to be the wings, like the ability to fly.
Flight through the wings.
And go anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah,
Because
I
I'm
mean
very
that's
much in a small box of Ohio. Like the
all
last time I was on a plane, I was 16. So
right.
Yeah,
I can see that. That would definitely be like a close second, would be the wings.
Yeah, I
The
mean,
only problem is the oh, sorry, Terry.
if you've got the hoard, you can probably access the wings. When you've got
You
money
just buy a private jet at that point.
Okay, fair. Horde, I like it. Horde, minions, and wings. They're probably the top three anyway, I think.
Yeah. Because, like, I feel like a breath weapon, that would just hurt, you know? That'd be very uncomfortable to just acid that just is indigestion, you
Yeah.
know?
I've already got that enough.
Yeah. I'm already on meds for that, so.
Welcome to the It's a Mimic podcast, where you never know what you're going to get.
Welcome back to It's a Mimic, where you never know what you're going to get. Today, we're continuing our discussion on Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition. I am Terry, and with me today are Pepperina and Kyle. And this episode is called Draconic Peoples, Beyond the Bourns, Bolds, Bands, and Battalions.
In this episode of the It's a Mimic podcast, this panel of Dungeon Masters is going to look at three kinds of Draconic humanoids that you can add to your dragon cults and campaigns.
Dragons get so many minions, creatures, and variations, which makes sense because they're in the title of the game. Other creatures like giants, beholders, trolls, and hags get a few variations as well. But what creatures do you think deserves more cousins, kin, and minions?
Let's roll for it.
All right.
We got 12 on this.
Six.
Uno.
You got a one. Okay, so I'm going first. What are the creatures? Well, okay, I'm not going to say giants. Beholders is a few more would be good. I probably would like more for the beasts. I know we have like the owl bear that's like a cross of some things, but I would like more interesting variations of beasts. I think we have a few dire versions of some stuff, but if we're living in this fantastical world, surely I should be able to get like miniature versions of things. Like, can I have a miniature bull? That would be cool. I get what, well, for a little bit. That's an example. Probably more cousins for the beasts. I just want smaller versions of things that are not puppies.
Okay,
I'm
interesting.
saying.
This go really goes with your minion stance.
For the minions, and the beasts won't talk. The
You just
beast
want
won't
small
talk,
things. Yeah.
but I can train them to understand things, so then they'll do it, but then they won't talk back to me, which
Okay.
is much better for efficiency.
Yeah.
Okay, so
They just don't talk
you want to be a Disney princess, is what you're saying here.
Wow,
I think
it
so.
seems
I think
nice.
that's it.
It
Yeah.
seems nice. I feel like they never have any real problems. I mean, their parents die a lot, but
Yeah.
ultimately, whatever their issue is within the movie, I'm like, this feels like it's not really a legit problem, but sure. So that would be nice.
Mm-hmm. We're really getting to the bottom of Terry today.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe elephants? Like, there's a couple variations, but like elephants and they're like, they creep me out. So more of those would be terrifying.
That feels like you're asking for trouble. They are scary. I've got to use elephants more often, I think.
Yeah.
Next campaign for sure. It's a good answer.
All right.
Kyle?
I really like slads, you know? Give me more frog creatures.
Really?
I think they're just like them and they're fun. Also, considering how often they get talked about, goblins are very like one dimensional, you know, like why aren't there more kinds of goblins?
That's true.
Yeah, that's
got
true.
Like goblins and bugbears that go together.
Yeah, there's a few different goblinoids, I suppose, but not many, and they're all quite different. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I was gonna say we should combine them all. So goblin, lithid, and tiny. A tiny goblin, a lithid. Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like it would be fun, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd use the fuck out of that, for sure.
Okay, it's almost time to dig into our draconic humanoids. Before we do, let's cut to an info break.
We have previously covered quite a bit in our discussion on dragons in 5th edition. For all those episodes and more, you can follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and dozens of other podcast apps. And if you'd like to support us, you can donate through the website, check our store, or join our Patreon and get access to other episodes and series. If you'd like to pay for some ad space on It's a Mimic, or just shout out to a friend, please reach out to us through our email and website that are listed in the show notes below.
This week on the Campaign Builder, Tyler and I sit down to talk about vengeance. But for now, let's get back to the episode.
Perfect, team. Okay, so this is where we get to roll initiative. Each of us has a draconic cousin that we're going to go through, draconic humanoid. So we'll roll initiative, and we know the drill. 3, 5, 19. 19. So, Kyle, you're first. And you have, you tell us what you have, and I'll let you take it away.
All right. So I've got Soriels, and this is also going to include Dragonbait, who is a Soriel. So Soriels first appeared in 1989 in the second edition adventure Curse of the Azure Bonds, followed by several more appearances in numerous other kinds of D&D media, from books, comics, to video games, and most recently in Tomb of Annihilation, though only in the form of a single character who is named Dragonbait. So even though we are covering them in a draconic episode, Soriels aren't really draconic. Like, they're closer to dinosaurs than dragons. And unlike most dragons, you know, Soriels are known to be a pretty community-oriented bunch, even though they come in 4 different forms, which actually cannot interbreed, and they treat each member of each caste with respect, knowing that the strength of the community lays in the different skill sets each one of them brings to the table. So there's Finheads, a name for a prominent fin at the top of their heads, who are smart, curious, and emotional, and also the most human-like of all the Soriels, though shorter in standing, standing only about 5 feet tall, with muscular and agile bodies and a long tail. They love new experiences and tasks, which makes them the most likely of their kind to be found out adventuring. There's Bladebacks, which are taller and bulkier and grow to about 7 feet, with rows of hard bone scale protrusions that run down from the tops of their heads down their backs all the way to the tips of their tails. So kind of like a stegosaurus. Bladebacks are highly social beings who love diverse company and engaging in conversations, tending to be empathetic and trusting. They are slow to both anger and forgive, and that makes them count advisory roles and working within the clergy. There's flyers, with 3 feet, 8 inches tall. They have thin, delicate bodies, short legs, stubby tails, and hands with large stretches that form wings. So like kind of membrane hands. They also tend to be both irritable and irritating. There's finally hornheads, which are the largest breed. They grow up to about 10 feet tall and are equipped with thick, powerful tails that are longer than their bodies. Hornheads have sturdy, bulky frames, long, sharp horns atop their Their head of tough, bony plates. Hornheads are slow, careful, and rational. With their impeccable planning and analytic skills, they have a knack for arts, sciences, and crafts, often becoming clerics, wizards, and sorcerers. Sauriels, as a whole, are a pretty friendly species and rarely make enemies, but are quick to respond to threats. As for their history, Sauriels do not actually originate on Toril, but come from an alternate material plane. I was reading about this thing, and it's like, apparently there are crystal spheres that hold entire universes or galaxies, kind of like Men in Black. It was weird. Anyways, they were first brought here. So the first Sauriel that was brought over to Toril was named Champion, who was later renamed Dragonbait. He was a paladin of justice who was captured and brought over while wandering the plane of Carceri by a fiend named False. Now, False was working with the god of Rot, Moander, and planned to sacrifice Dragonbait so that his, you know, incredibly lovely soul could be used to power the ultimate assassin. Their plan was ultimately thwarted, however, and Moander was nearly killed. But in an act of revenge, Moander used the last of his power to bring the rest of Dragonbait's tribe to the Lost Vale on Toril, where they were basically enslaved by the seed of Moander, forcing them to destroy all living things in the area, including their own eggs, in an attempt to rebuild Moander's power. Moander is later defeated again, however, not before fatally corrupting Dragonbait's true love and forcing him to end her life so that she could be free. The Sauriels are now trapped on Toril, basically, and decided to build a life for themselves here and turn Lost Vale into kind of a permanent settlement. And they spend most of their time restoring what Moander once commanded them to destroy. That was in 3.5. And now in 5e, about 100 years later from all this, Dragonbait is now found in the jungles of Cholt, where parties can meet him in 5e. So for stat blocks, the only stat block we get for this is Dragonbait. And considering the like crazy backstory he has, where he basically escapes a fiend and kills the god of Rot, it's honestly depressingly average, the stat block. So it has a CR of 5, a little over 100 hit points, and an AC of 17. 30 feet walking speed, and can understand common, but doesn't speak it. The Sauriel language itself is really strange. So it's done in a mix of high tones, which are too high for most humanoids to hear. And then they also emit smells based on their emotion. So, for example, when Sauriels are angry, they smell like fresh baked bread. When they're worried or nervous, they smell like ham, kind of like Dave. When they feel victorious, they smell like tar and wood smoke for devotion and piety. There's a couple more, but I'm not going to go into all of them. You're not looking at much of a fight with this guy, unless you are a fiend or an undead. And that's only because Dragonbait carries a +3 Holy Avenger longsword. So saving throws are in wisdom and charisma, like a standard paladin. Passive perception of 13. I mean, they really nerfed these guys from previous editions, where they used to get like infrared vision, but they even took that away. The only really interesting part of the stat block that I found, and I use that term pretty loosely, is its ability to detect alignment, which can be kind of cool if you have a PC that likes to pretend to be good but aren't, or, you know. And then it also gets 10-foot magical resistance aura from the sword. He doesn't even get healing, which is kind of weird. Just divine health, meaning he is immune to disease, which feels like kind of a ripoff to me. He gets multi-attack with 2 attacks using his +3 Holy Avenger. That is a +8 to hit, 5-foot reach, and deals 1d8 +5 slashing damage one-handed and 1d10 +5 slashing damage if used two-handed. If the target is a fiend or an undead, it takes an extra 2d10 radiant damage. And also as an action, he can use the sense alignment, which I mentioned earlier, where he can detect the alignment of a creature within 60 feet, so long as it isn't protected by divination magic by a spell or magical effect.
The stat block is depressingly not great. I would agree.
I thought it was really weird.
Okay. anything else you want to touch on before I take us to a round of questions here?
No, that's pretty much covers it.
Beauty. Okay. Team, let's roll initiative again here, and then I'll fire some questions out. We'll go one at a time. I got 12.
9.
2. I'm all over the map.
I'll ask on your own. I'll ask myself some questions. The first question I'll ask myself is about role-playing, quest or plot hooks. maybe adventure, a one-shot, some common rumors surrounding this monster. I think quest or a plot hook, I don't think I would have this NPC as having a specific quest or plot hook around them, but I think this would be a quest giver. I see this as a type of sage. I see this as a type of consistently reliable NPC that you can go back to where you will learn over time for sure you can trust them. If they're slow to trust and slow to forgive, that means they're going to be pretty consistent in their values. They're going to be pretty guarded in themselves, which is, that can be a sign that they're trustworthy, as in that it's not in their nature to try and deceive people. So I think I would use this NPC probably earlier tiers, maybe even later, as a quest giver and a way of keeping the party focused on what they're supposed to be doing. So that would be me. Who's next? Peperina?
All right. I think so. I would use the one that gossips a lot as the quest giver. And was that the one that flies? Did you say? Yeah. So like this one's just going to fly in and out, and it's going to be like super weird and not even know that it's giving you a quest. It's just going to be like, did you hear this thing? And your players are definitely going to fall for that and go like hunt that down. And it's just going to be a consistent, when you don't know what to do with your game, you just have that thing fly in and tell them a little thing and send them off. You need them to go in a different direction.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that. I never lead with gossip, and I should in my games. Mm-hmm. I never do it in that sense, but maybe I should.
Everybody falls for gossip.
I try and avoid
it. Like, what about in real life? Are you a gossip, Jerry?
No, I'm really not. And I never know what's going on anywhere, and I don't care. Lots of times. I think that's why I'm not really on social media or anything anymore. I realized for a long time I was kind of just going along with the habit of what everybody was doing. And then I was like, I fucking hate this. So now I'm kind of removed from everything. I'm too far the other way though. I do need to be more social. I think I fall into the trap of assuming people are busy. They don't want me to stop and talk to them for 45 minutes. They've got things they want to do. If I'm out with the dog, they don't want me bothering them and things. So I'm I'm too guarded now. So I'm definitely away from gossip because I don't have a clue what's going on with anybody. So I need to go back the other way. Maybe not gossip, but certainly conversation would be good.
Yeah. Maybe that NPC could teach you, a little bit. Use it as a little therapy. Get some gossip out there.
There you go.
Yeah. Who's next? Kyle, I think, was you? Or did you give your answer?
Yeah, that's me. I mean, role-playing, considering if we're talking about just Dragonbait, he doesn't even speak. Most of them don't even speak. Right. So, it could be interesting trying to mime, information across to people just using, facial expressions and then telling them about smells. Oh, you enter a new area and it smells like fresh baked bread, or I can't remember the smell for lying, but trying to tease out how each scent represents an emotion, or kind of trying to tease out hints to a party using the smells could be kind of interesting. Other than that, I really like the idea of using the little flyer as using the gossip. It makes me think of the one from The Land Before Time.
Mm-hmm.
What was his name?
Oh, I can't remember.
I forget. That movie is like...
I do like that a lot.
It's an amazing movie, but it's like a blur. You kind of repress things that are traumatizing.
Yeah.
It's
like I don't remember in detail. All of our childhood movies. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly right. And then I saw this thing recently that was about just how adults cartoons in the 90s were, stuff like Johnny Bravo and Dexter's Lab and stuff. They were really very adult in theme. Sometimes as you look back, it's like, man, that seems wildly inappropriate. We probably shouldn't be putting that in front of kids. But at the time, it was awesome.
Yeah, it really explains our generation.
Right.
If you just go back and look at our cartoons.
Right. Yeah, exactly. They were the best cartoons though. Okay, exploration, environmental interactions, clues you might be close to on, details on lairs, nests, loots, whatever we want to zoom in on. Look, I rolled highest, which means I get to take the low-hanging fruit here, which has got to be the smells thing, the sense of the emotions. I love that, especially if you haven't met this creature yet, but you're close to one, and all of a sudden it starts to smell like, was it bacon or ham or something? Just man-scent.
Ham.
Bill's gun. whatever it was, the other one, wood fire, these types of things. It would certainly be interesting, but these are, you would assume, you know, you probably would assume you're coming close to a camp of some kind, or the literal thing of what you're smelling. And so I think that's the low-hanging fruit for environmental clues. And exploration, inspiration for sure, because I think you get pretty creative with that. You send the party on a bit of a goose chase, but ultimately there'll be a nice twist to it. So I like that. The sense is a good one. Mm-hmm.
All right. Did you say that the anger was the baked bread?
Yes, I believe that's so.
Such a random one. Like, why is anger like baked bread?
Right, because the next one along was
I am a
fire.
Baker, and like I. Yeah, like as a baker, I don't associate bread with anger, but
as a baker,
no, I don't think there's anything that makes me happier than fresh baked bread.
Right, it seems very off, but I love that. I love that for them. I would like to think about what their like civilization is like, because there's so many different like characters here, right? There's so many different ones, mm-hmm. and they all have their own specific unique personalities in that. I would really build out like what the city looks like and talk about what your players are walking into, because they have built this city. It is a new, it's not where they're originally from. It is a new place that they have created. So it like wouldn't be in old maps or rumors, or they would just sort of happen upon it, not knowing it was there because it's brand new, and just describe like what that looks like, what them building it looks like, and what each person's or each creature's role is in that.
Yeah. All right. I, you know, my idea was very much along the same vein. I like the idea of, you know, it mentions that now they're trying to undo all the damage that they did before when they were enslaved. So I would love to, you know, kind of describe the players walking into, they're walking through a forest, and then all of a sudden it becomes just like a little more beautiful, you know, a little more like a little more bland than a natural forest would be. Yeah, just kind of caretakers. They're a fun alternate to a druid, I think, is how I would use them.
Right. That's pretty good. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Okay, what about combat then? Whether it's hunting or tactics, happens when it dies, benefits from harvesting it. You know, I got to lean into this scent thing again. I think if you're going to harvest something, if you can get some kind of glands out of it, the scent glands, even if it's just a one-shot item, I think depending on the emotion that it felt at the time of death, obviously it might feel some kind of fear if it's a drawn out battle or anger maybe, but maybe if you can one-shot it or kill it quick, like assassinate at the time when it's feeling another emotion, maybe that will be within the gland that you can harvest from it. So you can use that scent, even if it's one shot later on, for some type of deception or because for whatever reason it would be handy to do that. So to harvest those glands, I think would be useful. The rogue or somebody is going to find a reason for it to suddenly smell like bacon or ham or bread or wood fire or gun.
Yeah. I like the idea of seeing them hunt. Your players just like out in the woods, maybe sent after a certain creature and they finally find it, and then these swoop in and just watching what that looks like. And then you have to decide, like, are you going to pick a fight with them that you just they just took what you're after, or are you going to talk to them? What are your players going to do with that? Because some are definitely going to just shoot, and because that's my hunt. But some might talk to, well, you know, you have the rare one that will have conversation.
That'd be good. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they play that too. When you go, you know, if they don't speak your language, how are you going to communicate with these people? How are you going to effectively do that? Terry, your idea is fucking dark. I'm thinking about it like, you know, you get a quest from a perfumer who wants these scent glands to be able to make their new perfume. So you have to like elicit an emotional response before you kill them.
That's pretty dark. That's pretty dark. I don't know how far away from reality some of the things we're doing in that industry. reality that is. But yeah, sometimes Kyle, you just don't want to know how your stuff is made. Okay. But no. I like it. Okay, Pepperina, you're next. What do you have for us?
Okay. I'm glad that you remember that, because I didn't know where I fell in that. I have the dragon flesh. I will start us off. These come from Fizbin. So I will start us off with his quote. The best way to identify one of these grafters is if you see someone running around chanting, "Look at me, I'm a dragon, I'm a dragon," which is pretty accurate. Dragon flesh grafters are humanoids that have become so obsessed with dragons, they have found a way using forbidden rituals and dangerous experiments to fuse whatever parts of dragons they can find to themselves. They will go to great lengths to acquire these dragon parts, salvaging around dragon lairs, seeking out dragon corpses, or buying them off the D&D black market. If they are so lucky, they may happen upon a group of adventurers carrying some dragon parts they could buy, because adventurers are weirdos who carry that sort of thing around like it's totally normal. To absorb the magic left in these body parts, they must find a way to attach them to themselves or ingest them. However, it's not just as simple as eating a dragon heart and suddenly you are part dragon. Most people who seek out this power end up so scarred and damaged from the amount of power they intake that it kills them. Those who survive become monstrosities with little to no recollection of who they once were. They don't just get the dragon's magic either. They also get their undying lust for treasure. They will take whatever gold and gems they can back to their lairs and spend hours just staring at their treasure. Now, if you were to look at one of these creatures, you'd see a large bipedal monstrosity standing on average 8 to 12 feet with a mixture of humanoid and dragon parts. Its body will start to grow dragon scales the longer it has had time with the magic inside of them. They don't exactly get a dragon's breath weapon, but instead their insides fill with so much acid they can release it in a sort of belch, spraying those in a 30-foot cone. If the creatures in that area can't make a dex save, they take 4d6 acid damage, or half if they succeed. Their other attacks include a claw attack and a great club. They do have a multi-attack and can hit with one of each of those. Their stats are fairly average, but strength is their highest with a +3, and they aren't very charismatic, and that has a -2. Now, what happens when a grafter finishes grafting? They become a dragonflesh abomination. Their thirst for treasure is so strong they no longer have any bit of their old selves inside them. They sprout a tail and clumsy wings, according to the book, but they do get a fly speed. The acid in their stomach churns so hard they have a stench surrounding them that's so strong it gives them the ability of cloying miasma, and any creature within 5 foot of them must make a con save or become poisoned. Due to their constant state of changing and morphing more and more into a dragon-like creature, they get a regeneration ability and regain 10 HP at the beginning of each turn. Their special abilities, or their special attacks, all involve acid, getting an acid spit as a ranged attack and a bit stronger acid belch that now does 8d6 acid damage on a fail and half up. So that is our grafters and our abominations.
Beautiful. I used a dragon flesh grafter fairly recently in my campaign. His name was Krieg, and it's very enjoyable. Yeah, really fun NPC to use. Okay. Let's, should we roll again for the order of these? I forget how we do these. Adam will be screaming at me, but let's roll again for this.
Yes. That is generally how it works.
Okay. I got a 5. Yeah. This is only episode 262, right? Like, I should have it figured out. Okay. What'd you get, Peps?
It's all right. 11.
I got a 10.
Pepperina, you're going first with an 11. Give me something role play based. This can be a quest or a plot hook. It can be a type of one shot if you want to focus on rumors or role playing. Go ahead.
I mean, I think if you come across one of these, they are going to be obsessed, like definitely lean into that obsessive personality. You know, like somebody who can't stop painting dragon minis or something, that sort of thing. Yeah, they are going to like have a very one track mind. If you try to ask them about anything else, they are not going to give you any other information. They are going to be asking you questions. They're going to be trying to find out if you have any dragon parts, if you know where any dragon parts are, possibly trying to like recruit you into their cult. If you give them that sort of cult background where there's multiples of them doing this together, If you have a dragonborn in your party, I think that could definitely cause some tension where they're like become aggressive or very, you know, curious about that dragonborn.
Like an unhealthy obsession with them. Just like keep touching.
Yeah. Yeah. They become like a bit stalkery of your dragonborn. Like
two hands.
That uncomfortable. There's like zero boundaries there.
Right. Yeah. I love it. Kyle?
All right. Okay, sorry. I'm like caught up in the image of this thing now. Just like kind of picturing like a crackhead, you know, that just wants to sniff your dragonborn's hair.
Yeah.
I have one. I don't know where I put it. I do have one.
Well, a crackhead who wants to smell dragonborn hair?
Oh, well, none of those, but they're accessible. If I did want one, I'd find one.
Yeah, honestly, roleplay with these things sounds incredibly fun. Right? Especially if you like to do voices and stuff. I mean, like, you can break out the big guns. I like the idea of, you know, having two sides of this, right? Like, there's like a dragon sort of personality, and then there's the human one, and it kind of switches between them, right? Like, they're still kind of fighting, especially if you're still doing the grafter, right? Where it's mostly humanoid, I guess. And just kind of doing something like that. I would also love to play one of these as kind of like regretful of what they're doing. So now, you know, they see all the horrible changes that are coming along and, you know, they want to fight against it, but they don't know how. So it's trying to recruit your party into, you know, maybe trying to heal it or something, even if it's a doomed chance.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I like the idea of the regret kicking in later. Sometimes people make a lot of changes to themselves, right? And then start to regret it later on. Definitely understand. If you've ever tattooed a band name into your body, eventually you'll move on to things. That doesn't apply to much of my life these days. Great. Perfect. For me, I think for role-playing or how to include them in your adventure, my plan with mine was that they would be a consistent NPC that the party could go back to, where they may not be a good aligned NPC, but they would be useful. Dragonflesh Grafter is going to have a lot of knowledge on dragons, on their anatomy and their abilities. They'll be obsessed with them. They may also have immediate access to some things that could be useful because they're a Dragonflesh Grafter. They may have a voice box accessible or elemental glands or the claws or bones. So if you need any of these items that you can use for weapons or whatever, this would be an NPC where you could probably access dragon-related things quite easily or at least get the information that you need on them. So that was my plan to have, was an NPC that could be useful in that way. My party murdered it immediately as soon as it came into view because it's horrifying to look at, and naturally you would assume it was an enemy, and I should have thought of that. But that's how I would like to use it, as a consistent NPC to go back to for dragon-related items and information.
Yeah, we only don't kill the hot NPCs. You should know.
That is accurate.
Yeah.
That's accurate. Yeah. And people pretend like it's a bad thing and it's super toxic, but yet every single person I know does the same thing. Yeah.
Pretty privilege.
That's it. Anything that's attractive, it's like, let's hear them out first. Let's see what they've got to say. Great. Okay. Pepperina, what about exploration?
I mean, it says that they have lairs that they like take their treasure and that back to. So I would like to, especially if you're looking at the abominations, which have become like as dragon-like as they can. There being rumors of a dragon coming and stealing people's things and your party being sent off to and expecting a dragon, but finding this. And how then, like, you know, if you're in a dragon campaign, like I know you're running Terry and your party has probably seen a dragon lair already, the differences, like this would not be as organized as your dragon lair. That's very like meticulously planned out. I don't think they have that intelligence level as dragons do to sort and plan and decorate, as you will. Like it would be very hodgepodge and a pile and messy, and there would be parts of dragons like scattered about. So I think that would be an interesting difference for your party to see the difference in layers if they've already been to your traditional dragon lair.
Yeah, kind of like a hoarder home.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be very just messy and like no organization to it, I think.
Right.
Yeah. All right.
I like that.
I like that.
Cap.
Yeah. So I only really had one kind of idea for this. It just kind of stuck in my brain, but I like the idea of, you know, kind of hinting at it's not quite a dragon in this lair anymore. Like, you know, you'd see a claw mark against the wall, but rather than, you know, five claws digging into the wall, like there's two fingers that are actual dragon claws. So they get dragged through and, you know, there's gouges out of the wall. But then the other two fingers are, it's just like a blood smear. And like maybe they left an actual nail behind. Like what Pepperina said, there's not much thinking to them. It's more just kind of raw emotional outbursts. And so I think that would be reflected. Or if they took, you know, a temple that's fallen into disrepair, like maybe all the faces of statues have been kind of disfigured because they did it in a mindless kind of rage, or, you know, they're seeing something that they want, but they can't quite have and stuff like that. Yeah, just little clues that's like, this isn't quite right.
Right. Yeah. Like there's something off. Like they're not stable. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I would like to use, leaning into the adventure side, I would like to use the Dragonflesh Grafter as a way to make my game more deadly, or certainly with bigger consequences. If you, going back to what I was saying on the roleplay side, if you had a Dragonflesh Grafter as not necessarily an ally, but an acquaintance where you scratch each other's backs, you have a way of overcoming significant wounds because they can graft dragon parts onto your player character's bodies. So now you can have players who maybe lose action limbs. Maybe they'll take a wound from a creature. They can lose their hand because they have access to a dragonflesh grafter that can put that onto themselves or can put different parts of the dragon's body onto them. So now you can make your game very dark, but you also have an out for players to repair themselves if you make your game more deadly. So I would like that stuff. I recently had the wizard in my party died in the Mirror of Dead Men, came back as an undead. It's now a skeleton. So this would be the type of situation where it's like, if you don't want to be a skeleton, you might technically be a skeleton, but we can graft some dragon flesh onto you. We can graft some dragon flesh parts onto you so that you don't look like a skeleton. That type of weird stuff I would want to do.
Interesting.
Yeah, if you know a dragonflesh grafter, you can get grafted. So there you go.
Interesting. That's a really cool idea.
Yeah.
Would you do the madness bits with it? Like, would those dragon parts affect the player and how they think, or like alignment, maybe depending on what kind of dragon parts they're using?
I think I would certainly lean to like cell memory, which is something in real life, you know, that is being explored more. That kind of thing would maybe. Yeah, I would. Maybe memories, maybe now that they're more in tune with other dragons, for whatever that means, you know, maybe some crossover abilities will come from it. But yeah, I certainly would. It would be more than just they now have a young white dragon hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would certainly.
Yeah, I think you'd almost have to for your players to not just like go super murder hobo because like, well, we can just get grafted. What? Fuck it. Like there have to be consequences. Like,
yeah.
Like you can fix yourself, but there are bad things that come with it too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Depends what the players consider bad.
Yeah.
Some players are not fazed by things at all. And some players are
no. Really fucked up. Yeah. Really fucked up.
I had one player where she just kept getting into trouble with things that would age her. First it was a Sphinx, then it was the ghost horrifying visage. And her character started off very young and I think looked like 94 eventually. And it was that was particularly difficult for her to deal with. I was like, you're 20 years old, 30 years old. But anyway, okay, combat stuff.
Okay, wait. Just real quick before we move on. I want to go back to, you're talking about the dragon grafter that could help your party out. Do you ever think that a dragon might experiment and make these things, right? Like force this upon people? Trying to create minions.
Yeah, now maybe They would. Maybe a green dragon. They're very scheming. Maybe this would come up as part of, as a solution to one of their schemes. But hey, maybe we could achieve this end result if we tried this. Black dragons, I know, are very sadistic, but I don't think they would do this just for sadism. There's other ways that they can just hurt people and make their life uncomfortable. It would probably be because it isn't an advantage to do that, which may be more green dragon aligned, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it would be very specific as to what kind of dragon. Like, I don't think all dragons would, but there's definitely a couple out there. That...
Yeah. And I imagine dragons such as the red dragons, probably even the blue dragons, are probably more purists. Like, they wouldn't like this. Probably mm-hmm. feel like they're tainting themselves to do this. And then white dragons, I don't think this would even be of interest to them.
Yeah, they wouldn't care so much.
Greens for sure.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, like, you know, a dragon is force feeding these people its own blood and then just taking it and dropping it into cities around its lair to try to clear them out and make them afraid.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't want anybody to know I'm here, but I want these people gone and I want them terrified of dragons.
Right.
So I'm going to warp these villagers and then send them back to where they came from. So they, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, you're certainly right. There's no reason why not. That wouldn't be believable. Pepperina, what about combat stuffs?
I mean, it says in here that it's acid is their main damage. It makes sense with, like, I don't know, the acid in their stomach and that kind of stuff. But I do think you could, if you really wanted to, switch that up to other, like, damage types. If they only have blue dragon parts, I wouldn't give them acid damage. So if you wanted to go that route, I think as a DM you could. But it would have to be a very, like, specific, like, reason. Like, they're obsessed with that kind of dragon and only want that kind of dragon part. You'd have to give them that in their, like, backstory and history and that kind of thing. But I definitely think you could. Mm-hmm. So I would maybe play around with that, what other damage types would look like with it. And instead of, like they have that stench that comes off of them, you would have, like, almost like a static electricity if you went blue with, like, lightning damage. Like, in that 5-foot radius, it would give, like a shock around them that would do a little bit less damage, you know, but... it would almost have that, like, wall of electricity coming off of them.
Right. Yeah. So it'd work the same way as, like, an aura, but it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that.
Kyle?
I imagine fighting these things would be a lot of mindless rage, right? Like, there's no sense of self-preservation. I don't think they're thinking that far ahead. It is very in the minute, in the moment, and just go, 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 go. Yeah.
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 Like they're very just, like, one note driven. So
yeah.
Even with the weapon that they use by the stat block, the great club, that suggests that, right? That's not any type of precision weapon, it's not a martial weapon. You know, that's just, they're probably just going to beat on one threat until it's removed and then move to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're looking for combat. They're just, like, if you happen to disrupt them while they're doing their thing,
yeah,
then they'll fight. But, like, I don't think they care enough about anything other than becoming a dragon to engage.
Right. I think that's important. That's important. Yeah. To know, right? They're not looking for combat at all. And mm-hmm. I think for me, I agree with Kyle. It's probably going to be more of a rage thing. I don't think their stat block is strong enough that they're much of a combatant anyway, if they're on their own, right? They have their acid wretch breath, so they better get lucky with that. If not, they're probably going to need some sort of little minions with them anyway. So for me, the way I used mine was that he was essentially in charge of a clutch of 5 black dragon wormlings that I kind of used as one kind of hunter killer team called the Grim. And so he was their boss and he moved around with them. So what my point is, you need a little something extra as far as combat goes for this guy. They're not particularly strong. They have a great club and they have their acid wretch, and that's it. So if you need them to be more of a threat, you've got to give them something else. And it's probably going to be some sort of little minion, like some wormlings or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You do need them to be combat effective. Okay, perfect. Anything else on Dragon Flesh before we move on?
I did have a thought reading it, because it says they're like 8 to 12 feet. I would like to see, and Terry, you're going to hate it. I'd like to see a gnome version. Because they're just a humanoid that could only find, like, wormlings. Like, they can only have wormling parts because that's the size they are.
Yeah.
And I would make one small.
Sure. Gnomes could be bad as well, right? Everybody thinks gnomes could be bad as well. Okay, coming into the last one for today then. I have Draconians. Excited about. Draconians are essentially a race of dragon humanoids. They're also known as dragon men sometimes because they walk upright and they're mostly human-sized, though there is some larger versions. They have scaly bodies like dragons. They have a snout and a short, stubby tail. But the way that they're created then, they were originally, if you follow the Dragonlance lore, they were originally created in order to fill the ranks of the dragon armies for the Dark Queen Takhisis, which is essentially the Dragonlance version of Tiamat, the five-headed dragon queen, and they are made out of corrupted metallic dragon eggs. They're made from rituals essentially that corrupt these dragon eggs so that when they're born they become these human-like draconians. And there are different types of them. So there's a lot of different stat blocks, a lot of different types of draconians. I just want to touch briefly on the metallic draconians and the differences between them. And then I have selected one dragon draconian stat block to go through. So the first type I want to cover is the Aurak. So this is the rarest of all draconians. These are hatched from gold dragon eggs. And they are the only draconians without wings, and they'll stand about 7 feet tall. They're considered to be the most intelligent and the fiercest of all the draconian subspecies. And they rely on their magical powers rather than fighting with melee weapons. They're more likely to be mages in human armies. And many Aurochs are considered to be waiting for the perfect opportunity to defect from the dragon armies to pursue their own obsessions with magic and power. So not really martial type, certainly more arcane focused. And it's kind of known that while they may be part of the dragon army, they're just looking for opportunities to leave to do their own thing. The next type is the Baaz, B-A-A-Z. These are the smallest of the draconians and hatched from brass dragon eggs. They're typically used as ground troops in the dragon army forces for Takhisis. They're known to be often abused and treated as slaves by others because they're the weakest of all the draconians. They'll only stand 5, maybe 6 feet tall, and they have small wings. But they because of their small wings, they may not fly well, but they are able to run very fast. Next type is the Bozak. Bozak draconians are made from bronze dragon eggs. Most are well known for their leadership and their understanding of warfare, which I think makes sense with the bronze dragon background. The bronze dragon type, the Bozak, they're also gifted with magic. And while Bozaks are not gifted as gifted as their Aurak cousins, they still have arcane mastery as well, which is quite formidable. The next type is the Kapak, K-A-P-A-K. I know we're supposed to master these pronunciations, and I do with the main creature types, and then when it comes to the subspecies, I always forget. So the Kapak, I would call it. Draconians are a result of corrupting copper dragon eggs. They are much like other draconians who prefer to be around their own race only. They're unique in the fact that they have venom glands in their mouths. When they die, they dissolve into a seething and potent acid. The last type is the Sivak. Sivak draconians are unique among their race as they are capable of true flight. Due to this upside, they are often employed by their commanders as scouts, and they're created from the corrupted dragon eggs of silver dragons. So that's the five different types of draconians that we have. And they all have their own stat blocks, but then we have a number of other different stat blocks between Dragonlance and Fizban's. The one that I wanted to focus on was the Draconian Dreadnought. One reason is I have a Draconian Dreadnought mini for you guys right here. This is my little Draconian Dreadnought, which I have not introduced to my party yet, but I'm sure they will meet that person soon. So Draconian Dreadnought, larger than others, is considered to be a large monstrosity. They have natural armor, which will give them a 16 armor class, and their hit points are 60, 10, plus 24. The average of that is 57. They have a fly speed of 60 feet as well as a walking speed of 30 feet. Their strength is by far their strength and constitution are by far their highest stats. Everything else is very average. Everything else, dexterity, intelligence, wisdom, and charisma, is all 10s across the board. So they're basically average humanoids, other than the fact that they're incredibly strong and they have an incredible constitution. They have something called death throes. This is one of the reasons that I chose this stat block in addition to another ability. Draconians, when they die, they have a last final burst of magical energy. So when this draconian is reduced to 0 hit points, it bursts into flames and is reduced to ashes. Each creature in a 10-foot radius sphere around the Draconian must succeed on a DC 13 dexterity saving throw or will take 3d6 fire damage. That's when it's killed. Gets a multi-attack. By the stat block for the Draconian Dreadnought, it has two serrated swords, which gives it a pretty strong slashing attack. And it also has a tail weapon as well. Reactions. It has one very good reaction called Shape Theft. After the Draconian kills a medium or smaller humanoid, the Draconian can magically transform itself to look and feel like that creature while retaining its game statistics other than its size. It'll shrink if it's a medium creature, for example. This transformation lasts until the Draconian dies or uses its action to end it. And I love this. I love this. So the Draconian Dreadnought, a bit more on the background for that one. This is the largest of the Draconians. They fly on their mighty wings over the battlefield to wherever fighting is the thickest. So they go straight into the heart of the battle. And their magical ability to change their appearance that I just mentioned is to mimic those that they've slain, which allows them to sow confusion and despair among their enemies. So there's a little psychological warfare aspect to it as well. So that is the Draconian Dreadnought. And that is Draconians and how they're brought about. First little thoughts on Draconians there.
There's a lot of them.
There's a lot.
So many.
There's a lot. Let's roll initiative and let's go through your thoughts on what I mentioned about any of those five types, or we can stick to that Draconian Dreadnought as an example that we can all focus on if you would like to. I rolled a 4.
10.
7.
Okay, Paparina.
We're not rolling super great today.
No, nobody's rolled right.
I need to
same
remember.
Order.
These are very cool dice because they're like, there's a dragon inside of them. They're metal, like metal cages with a dragon inside, but they roll like shit. Mm-hmm. I have to remember never to actually use them in a game.
They're decorative dice. Paparina,
when you hear when you heard all of that about Draconians and how they're corrupted from those dragon eggs and the slight differences between the metallic ones there and the information I gave you on the Draconian Dreadnought, what comes to mind when you think of role playing?
I mean, there's so many different ones and different kinds. I mean, we know that all dragons have their own personalities, right? So they also, like, each type acts a certain way. And while these are corrupted, I would still give them a hint of that personality trait that dragon type has, whichever one of these you are using. The thing that made the most sense to me was the brass dragon you said are sort of the weakest ones. Because the brass dragons are not very fighty. You know, they are more... They want to talk to people. They want to collect sentient items that they can have conversations with. They want to tell you stories. So I don't see them as very combative. So that made a lot of sense to me. So I would research that dragon type and take little pieces of their personalities and put them in there still, even though they are corrupted, and maybe twist it a little bit, whichever one you are using.
Yeah. Okay, I like that.
Who's next, Kyle? I think you were next, right?
Yeah, that's for me. I like the Orak ones that you were talking about, the gold dragon ones that are, you know, they're just waiting for their chance to escape and do their own thing, right? Like, what is, because gold dragons are the best of the dragons, right? They're the highest ideal.
Yeah, they are considered right? The strongest of the metallic.
Yeah,
like high level with the red dragon of the metallic.
Okay, yeah. So like they're like the ultimate good, but then they're corrupted. So, you know, what do they want? What is their ultimate goal? I think could be really fun and one of those NPCs that you can't really trust, but maybe you want to, right? You want to help them get free, but what are they going to do with that freedom once they get it? So I would like to, I don't know, play around with the kind of motivations of what they might want.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. And I think I'll piggyback off that as well when we think about what do they want. But the fact that they're corrupted from birth means that they're entering the world and moving through the world from birth with this imbalance, with this corruption. Some people, like in real life, they may get corrupted later on, but most people have that kind of zero point of where we all kind of have a equal ideal balance of good and evil. And then maybe you might get corrupted, like you're taken down one way, but after that ends, you'll kind of come back to that zero point. If all you know is that corruption, if that's to you, it won't feel like corruption, that you're just raised to believe that that's the way the world is. These people are right. These people are wrong. You've never explored any option of anything else being different. Everybody who you know knows this to be true. And so that's like your zero point for the world. So For me, if you were able to, I'll stick with the Aurak as well. If you were able to pull an Aurak out of that society, it's going to be a lot of learning and things that seem so basic to us, like perhaps how you would treat people and necessary use of force and what is considered correct and not correct. All of that would be completely alien. And it wouldn't necessarily be because they are evil. They have just been taught incorrectly, I suppose is the word. So it would be a little bit clumsy, I think. But I would like to see that development. But you just have to remember that corruption is because that's all they've ever known. So it may be slow and they may not be doing what would be considered to be bad things because they're bad. It's just that they don't understand anything else. So yeah, it's just to agree with Kyle, it's an interesting thing to explore, is the corruption.
It'd be a fun sidekick to have for a party, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Kill? No, don't kill him, you know?
Yeah.
You know, he's trying to cheat us, but it's not that bad, you know?
Right. Sometimes people have those sidekicks where they become almost, you know, like there's like lawful stupid, but then there's like evil stupid. And it's like, they're not... They may not necessarily be so chaotic in that sense, like kill everything, but I think their proportionality or their idea of what is necessary force might be wrong. So if it's like, hey, that guard, someone attacked us from that window over there, that doesn't mean you have to level the building and everything in it, right? That's there's a proportionality thing, which I think may be off for them. But yeah, you're right. They would make good psychics. Perfect. Okay, Pepperina, we're moving on to adventure, yeah. Exploration, inspirations.
Okay. Environmental impacts. They are made out of dragons. Like, they're humanoid, but they come from dragon eggs. And as we know, dragons have impacts on the environment around them. If you have an army of dragons, like dragon kind, what impact would that have to the environment around that area of war, like in their encampments, the areas they move into? Like, there has to be something. It might not be as big as a regional effect for an actual dragon, but I would have something coming off of them. There would be some sort of impact, whether that's less wildlife in the area, or as we've seen with the gym dragons, they have more wildlife in the area. They attract wildlife based on what they like to eat. You know, rocks moving or things, you know, shifting, things growing or dying. I would really look into what kind of things you could have with that, with an entire army of these creatures that were made from dragon eggs coming into it.
Yeah, I like that idea of how do they affect the environment when they're coming at you in number, right? Mm-hmm.
Like, if it's just one, it might not be that, like, if you encounter just one, but an entire army, their powers, like, seeping into each other, into that environment has to do something.
Yeah, I do like that. Cal?
Okay, so a couple of things. One, going back to the original question, if you could have anything of a dragon, what would you pick? I kind of like the idea of having whatever I like to eat just sort of show up around me.
You're the dragon.
You know, I'm feeling spaghetti, and then all of a sudden someone comes along like, hey, you want this?
That's a very gym dragon trait. Like, all of them do that.
There's a number of different apps for that, Kyle. And ever since COVID, they made it so now we don't even have to see them. They'll just leave it at your door.
Yeah. Just leave them. You can get them. But I'm talking for free.
Right. Fair. It's definitely not free.
There's only so many coupon codes, you know?
Yeah. Okay, and then second for exploration, I like the idea of finding... Because it says, I read somewhere that, you know, there's dozens of these things that come from like a single egg, right? So what if you found their hatching layer, right? Where it's just kind of like that scene in Alien where there's just like this cave and it's just littered with eggs. Some of them are open and some of them are closed. And then you can watch them just like explode out of this corrupted egg. Like, I'm picturing if we're going with a gem dragon, right? You just see all these black veins laced through this crystal. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, you're right. There's multiple that come out of a single dragon egg. Yeah, that's right. I'm stuck on what Pepperina said with the regional effects if they're in number, because I think as far as exploration and clues go, you could use that a lot for clues. If there's an army of these things moving, you know, let's just say the regional effect is like they're scorching the earth or poisoning something, but you'll see that in file as they move through the earth, but it may also give you an idea, clues into what their strategy is, because you'll see how their troops will break off and maybe flank things, or how they're moving across the ground. Maybe you'll have signs of what they're eating and what they're doing along the way based on what their regional effects are, which I think will be much more pronounced from these types of creatures as opposed to if you just had normal humanoids moving across. So I would use those regional effects and the trail that they leave behind to give clues as to what their intention is, what their go-to tactics are, that kind of thing. So you're much better prepared for when you actually catch up with them. Okay, last one, Pepperina, combat inspirations.
I mean, you're not going to fight just one. They're an army. So definitely lean into that. Lean into all of their different abilities and really research and think about how they work together. Like, as the DM, really sit down, look at all of their stat blocks, think, okay, this one has this ability, this one has this ability. How can I push the players into a certain area or take away, you know, what they can do, give them disadvantage, or, you know, move them how I want to move them, because you have an entire army with their own special ability. They're not all just like foot soldiers, right? Like, they each have a thing that they can do and a specialty that they have. So lean into that and work together.
Okay.
Yeah, that's really strategic, that's important. Strategic battle. Yeah, they're not going to be on their own. They're going to be working in number. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cap,
I also liked what you said about them like busting into flames after you kill them. I love an enemy that like takes you down with it. Like, that's my favorite kind of monster that I come across.
I love that as well. Yeah.
I love how each of them has a different death thing, right? Like, some of them turn to stone, some of them turn to smoke. One of them, was it? I was just reading it. The Civac, when killed, it crumbles into dust and then forms a spectral shrieking image of the creature that killed it. That lasts for 1 minute. Like, that's fucking cool.
That's fucking cool.
Yeah.
I'm thinking. Sorry, Kyle, go ahead.
Sorry? No, you go first.
I was just going to do mine, but then probably like you hadn't finished yours.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, the combat, what I would do for them. If I was going with the Dreadnought, I like the Dreadnought a lot. I also like how in the little character art, it looks like he's got like a beer belly. Just in the armor that just covers his little beer belly.
Yeah. Right. Because
what do they have to do when they're not combating? They just sit around and drink.
Yeah. But he's pretty jacked. It looks like a lot of weight training, no cardio to me.
So I like their shape theft. I would definitely use that, right? And look like a creature. Oh, okay, never mind. I had an idea, but I didn't realize that creature had to kill it first before it could take over the body. Mm-hmm. Although you could have like an entire town of these things that like they wiped out the whole town. There's not a human left in it. And all these draconians are just in disguise in this town.
Yeah.
And just like pretending, waiting for like maybe say an army to come through that's going to attack whoever's leading them. And, you know, the army comes in, thinks it's like just a normal town, you know, we'll go to sleep. And then these draconians in disguise just fucking murder them all.
Yeah, I like that. Like, you can prepare. Mm-hmm. Really, the attack starts a lot. It starts well before you think it's happening, because they can infiltrate that town. They can do some shape theft and some key characters. They can take control of units within the town or important buildings, and then the main attack can come. And they're kind of getting attacked. Whoever's left fighting is being attacked from both sides, from inside and from outside. So I really like that.
Or kill an entire platoon in an army, right? And then just replace them. So you got enemies. You got whole soldiers behind enemy lines already.
Yeah, yeah. And then you can really expand on that. Like, what does that look like to everybody else? That will just look like a unit of a particular army has, or traitors. And so that will affect relations with that group of people as a whole. So that's it. You could really play with that. And it all just comes from that one ability that draconian has. And so I'm going to piggyback off that as well. I'll do it much more localized, where if you're in combat, thinking about the type of maps or environment I can use, where corridors or short ways, where basically if you can get the party out of sight of each other, when you use that shape theft ability, that enemy now looks like that PC. So you can rejoin the fight elsewhere, and nobody else knows about that, right? And if these characters are coming in number, you have a number of different ways in which they can really hurt the party without just their more obvious actions, right? So I love the death throws, because that could happen if you're in a tight area. That could really cause damage if there's a number of these things happening at the time, because the party has to kill all of them. Sure, that would be the goal. So this is going off in a tight area, as well as if you use the environment properly, you can use the shape theft, where the party may lose track of who they're supposed to be fighting and who they're not fighting, because they can't use their meta knowledge, right? So there's a lot of ways to sow confusion and cause a lot of damage very easily without just using the standard actions of fighty-fighty. Yeah, I love it. You can get creative with
combat. Do you think they would like sacrifice themselves to blow up and take out other soldiers or other armies? That way.
I didn't see it as sacrifice. I just saw it as just fight to the end, and then I'm still hurting you.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, even if you get me.
Like if they went
like a kamikaze.
If they went undercover and yeah, I was just thinking if they went undercover and like got in a crowd of people and had a partner take them out, like two of them take each other out at the same time and explode in that crowd.
Oh, like a suicide bomber?
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
I mean, you could certainly play it that way. You can certainly play it that way. Or Pepperine, I'm with you, but fuck it. Don't get them to do it to each other. Get the party to do it to them. Like, because they'll think they're clever taking their sniper shot from the bell tower or something into the crowd. And then as a result of that, it blows up and kills civilians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's more of them in the crowd.
Then your player has to deal with the fact that they just caused that.
Right. Which is something that we think that they would feel guilty of. I know that they won't care. I have
unless they took out like a beloved NPC, they won't care.
I have one player in my party. There used to be two that cared about killing people. There was two of them, and then one of them, at first she was like, do we just kill everybody all the time? And I was like, no, that's not what happens. It's just that's what these cycles do. And then she started to kill people all the time. And then she was like, this is great. How do we do this en masse? It was weird. And then, so now I have one person in the hook that's like, maybe we shouldn't just kill everybody all of the time. And everybody else, murder. So I don't think they'll care, is my point. But we would like to think that
I'm not sure what that says about your DMing style, Terry. That you convince someone to become. I mean, you created a sociopath.
Yeah.
I didn't convince them to do anything. Oh. This is how they at the end of their weeks on their Thursday night when they're playing their game and they want to let off some steam. It becomes the purge. That's what they do. I don't think it's anything to do with me. I would like them to try and make friends with people. They don't.
It's because you need hotter NPCs. We've already
that. There you go.
Maybe I do. Other NPCs, perhaps. All right. Anything else for combat?
I want to build on what Pepperina said. I like the idea of them. Will they kill each other? I mean, there's so many options for these guys that, I definitely think that it is a possibility of what they might do. And I think it is also going to depend on, like, who's their commander and stuff. But the idea of what if they set off, like, a chain reaction, right? Like, there's 100 of them and they're all standing 10 feet apart just far enough that the radius of each of them hits the other ones and just massive implosion.
Yeah. That would be great for like a last stand. Yeah. I love that. I love it. Well, it's almost time to take a long rest, but before we do, let's gather all around to enjoy a nice warm info break.
If you've been inspired by the conversation in this episode, please feel free to reach out and share your creativity and ideas with us and the rest of the community. You can reach us on Facebook and Instagram or on our subreddit r/itsamimic. Also, if you're feeling particularly generous, please follow and subscribe and leave us positive reviews, likes, and comments. Engagements like that help us pop up on search engines and keep this show running.
So if you were DMing and one of your players approached you about playing a homebrew race based on your draconic humanoid from this episode, what ability score increases would you bake into that homebrew?
I think for me, there's some obvious ones, right? Like if they wanted to be a draconian dreadnought, okay. Strength and con makes absolute sense. So I would probably lean into those because if they're trying to homebrew that as a race, like I know the way D&D is going now, where it's a bit more flexible with these things, but I think it should be true to what the intent is behind that. So if you're a dreadnought, it's got to be strength and con. I don't think it makes sense to come to me and say, I want to be a dreadnought, don't worry about my size and muscular features. I want to be higher in wisdom and intelligence. It's like, all right, it doesn't fit. So choose something else. So strength and con for a dreadnought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would look at not necessarily an increase, but a decrease, because it specifically says that, I mean, it says their strength is the highest. So sure, you can have a bump to strength, but it says that their charisma is so low, it's in the negatives, for the dragon flesh. And like, their whole thing is sort of being gross and obsessed. And like, you know, they stink so bad that they poison people with them. So like, they're not super charismatic. So if you want to be one of those, like, I think I would decrease your charisma score a little. Like, you're not getting above a 10 charisma.
Yeah.
You know, you're not coming in as one of these and a bard and a 20 charisma. Like,
yeah, I like that. Yeah, I like that. The way you present yourself is unacceptable. You are maxed out at 10 charisma, and you're lucky that you're getting to average, actually.
Yeah, for mine, I guess it would depend on which one you're gonna go for. Right. Like they vary wildly, right? The flyer ones are smaller. So probably I'm going to max you out at, in terms of strength and stuff like that. The other ones are pretty flexible, I guess. Right. Like the biggest ones are also the smartest ones. So I don't know. I don't like telling players what they have to do. I would rather they bring me a solution and then I'll go based on that. So if they go, I want to do this and I want to have my plus in this and this, I'd be like, okay, but you're going to, if it's drastically different, you're going to have to take a hit somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Or if it doesn't really fit with it, you know, we'll play around with it until it kind of levels out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it sounds
have a good reason why, you know, not just.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're saying you don't want to dictate to them absolutely what they must do, but you're willing to explore the options, but you're going to help them balance it. So that it's still fair and thematically makes sense, but you're not going to it's going to be a discussion, conversation about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, that's all for this part of our discussion on Draconic Humanoids and D&D 5th Edition. Please take a second to engage with a like, follow, comment, and review to help push our engagement. And don't forget to subscribe to find future inspirations for your campaigns.
If you'd like to support us, we have a store with some merch and a donate button on our website. That's www.itsamimic.com, as well as a Patreon. This episode and others can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and most other podcast apps. Thanks for listening to It's a Mimic, where you never know what you're going to get.
This has been an It's a Mimic production. Please check the show notes for this episode to see links, time codes, and credits, and don't forget to reach out and share your own inspirations.
Oh shit, I just lost my page. There we go. I'm clicking between my tabs.
Internet. That sucks because you have the next line.
I know, that's it. I knew that. And I was trying to go back to the right tab, but closed the thing. Okay, we're going to move it on to Draconians, guys. I have to do what I always do, and I have to take a pee break because I've drank 4 cups of coffee, and it's catching up with me now. So if you just give 1 minute.
Coffee cup was massive, too.
I think it's just close to the camera. It's actually just a regular size. If I bring it back, it's just a regular size.
I don't know. That looks real big.
I think we have matching coffee cups. Like, there's a design inside, and then it's got like a textured, colored outside.
We have the same coffee cups? What the hell?
I think we do.
It's the same collection. Do you have and they're different colors? There's like yellow and red and blue. Great.
Yeah, I got a dark blue one as well.
Nice. Nice. Okay, I'll be back. I'm not going to wear my. Last time I did this, I had my headphones on. I could hear Pepperina and Adam talking to me or about me as I was peeing. So I'm not going to make it.
But that's too bad. I was going to shit talk him while he was gone. If he did,
he could hear you.
That's funny.
I mean, we still can because this is recorded, so Adam could just put it in later.
Oh yeah, that's true.
That's what Adam and I usually do, you know.
I'm pretty sure his accent is fake.
Yeah.
just trying to sound more cultured.
That's all Terry and I have going for us on this podcast are our accents. Like, that's been Reddit posts that our two accents bring diversity to the group. Yeah.
That's hilarious. I think you bring a little more to the table than that. I mean, you bring your painting skills, you know, your deep dragon knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sadly, I related a lot with the dragon grafters. I was like, I get it, you know. I consider it.
If it wasn't for that whole going crazy thing, you know, I'd be
if they looked if they looked a little hotter, I'd be into it.
Yeah,
and you let them talk. They get to talk. Let's hear them out. All right, team. Adam's throwing
so up if
script. Sorry, Kyle. I was going to say Adam's throwing up for these new scripted things here because I think I know what it's going to say, and it doesn't, and it throws me off.
Not a big fan of proofreading, huh?
Well, it's because some stuff is repetitive, right? We know how we do our intro, outro, and then you get to the outro. You're like, that's the outro, and then it's been rewritten. You're like, oh shit!
See you next Tuesday.